Okay. My hearing's not the greatest. I think I heard Dennis's bell buzzing out there, so we'll get ready to get started here. It's 7 o'clock, according to that clock back there, so we'll get going. We are in the, trigger to click here. There we go. We're in the fourth quarter of our year, 3 year cycle. Through with the first part of the United Kingdom, the two-quarter study of the United Kingdom. We have Saul and the first half of David this quarter. We started last time in 1 Samuel chapter 8 and looked at the people when they said we want a king to be like the people around about us, like the nations around about us. And that was chapter 8, which we looked at Sunday. Tonight we'll look at chapters 9 and 10. Are you clicking or am I clicking up there? Alright, so tonight we'll look at chapters 9 and 10, and it's about Saul being anointed king. He'll be selected, Samuel will pick him out, God will tell him which one to pick, and Samuel will anoint him privately first, and then a public anointing for all the people. But it kind of ends on an anti-climax at the end of chapter 10. Well, that's his anointed king. It kind of goes out. I mean, it's just kind of nothing happens. So we'll look at that and we'll get down to the end of chapter 10. We'll start out with a little map stuff. So let's kind of get where we are here. I'll see some video and they got the sound fixed. So your video should be about better tonight. Let's kind of get oriented where we are, on the map. This whole section right in here comes into play with the next few chapters. All right, here's Dead Sea, top of Dead Sea, here's Jerusalem. Now, this is very hill country. We've got the coastal plain out here, the foothill valleys here, big time mountains up here, 4,000 foot drop from here down to the Dead Sea and the Jordan Valley over here. Right across here is a lower part of these hills up down through here. So this is kind of a natural east-west corridor through here, going across this part. So from Jerusalem up to Bethel up here, it's about 11 miles. So it's not very far. It's not like you'd think it'd be a big, long territory. It's about 11 miles. So think about from here down to Calhoun, is all we're talking about, Calhoun College, is all we're looking at when we talk about from Jerusalem up to Bethel. Now, you've got a lot of little towns in here, cities that are really important. Gibeah. You're going to see that at the end of it tonight. Here's Geba, Michmash, Mizpah. That'll come into play in tonight's lesson. Over here's Gilgal. That'll come into play too tonight. Kiriath-Jearim is where the ark stayed for a long while. That's where Philistines had it and brought it back here. And to this whole little area of Benjamin. This is called the Benjamin Plateau. That's where the tribe of Benjamin was. Up here's the big hill country, Ephraim, Jerusalem, Hebron, Bethlehem, down below it over here. So, watch this little video about 7 minutes and talk about this whole area in here, particularly the western part of it. And they'll talk about these different towns and you'll see why this area here is so important to this part tonight. Okay, Jeremy.
Shalom. This video is commentary for the Satellite Bible Atlas, maps 1-8 and 1-9, approaches to Jerusalem and the Benjamin region. We will focus on a cross-section of territory that stretches over four regions. The Shephelah foothills to the west of Jerusalem, the hill country where Jerusalem sits, 2,500 to 2,800 feet above sea level, then to the east, the rugged Judean wilderness sloping down to the Rift Valley and Jericho. Jerusalem's latitude is about the same as the top of the Dead Sea. So, to find Jerusalem quickly on any map, from the top of the Dead Sea, come directly west or left. Remember, however, that Jerusalem is over 4,000 feet higher in elevation than the Dead Sea. Note that the area north of Jerusalem was allotted to the tribe of Benjamin. Jerusalem itself sits within the borders of Benjamin. we will see that the most important routes to Jerusalem, even from the east or west, approach Jerusalem from the north, that is, through the territory of Benjamin. On map 1-9, take a closer look at the important area just north of Jerusalem. The area is called the Central Benjamin Plateau. It is relatively flat ground on the Hill Country watershed, with canyons cutting to its east and west. Only 3 to 7 miles north of Jerusalem, the Central Benjamin Plateau is outlined by the biblical cities of Gibeon on the west, Mizpah on the north, Geba on the east, and Gibeah, the capital of Saul, on the south. Ramah, the hometown of Samuel, is at the center of the plateau. The Central Benjamin Plateau is staging ground for main routes heading to Jerusalem. Control of Central Benjamin means access to Jerusalem. A historical example of this can be seen on map 6-2. During the divided monarchy of Israel's history, Baasha, king of Israel in the north, came down and captured Ramah in Central Benjamin, as 1 Kings 15:16 says, that he might prevent anyone from going out or coming in to Asa, king of Judah. Through diplomatic maneuvering and war by proxy, Asa removed this threat to his capital in Jerusalem and established a border between Judah in the south and Israel in the north by building up the towns of Mizpah and Geba. Even east-west routes crossing through the hill country are naturally funneled through Benjamin. The region of Benjamin is lower in elevation than the hill country north and south of it. If one looks at the hill country from the west, Benjamin sits in a kind of saddle. Jerusalem and Benjamin are 800 feet lower than the hills near Bethel to the north or Hebron to the south, so east-west routes tend to run through Benjamin. Let's look at the western approach to Jerusalem on map 1-8. The western approach comes from the coastal plain through the Ajalon Valley in the Shephelah foothills. In the Old Testament period, the city of Gezer supervised this area. Gezer today is a large ruin, or tell, that was fortified by the Canaanites, Philistines, and Israelites. As the front door to the capital of Israel, King Solomon fortified Gezer. Solomonic period ruins have been excavated here at Tel Gezer.
We're at ancient Gezer on a Solomonic gate!
From Gezer, the route continues east through the Ajalon Valley to Emmaus, the New Testament period counterpart to Gezer. From Emmaus, the route angles a bit north to the Beth Horon Ridge route. By staying on the Beth Horon Ridge, the route avoids the deep canyons that drain the hill country. The route joins the Central Benjamin Plateau at Gibeon. It connects with the Road of the Patriarchs, or Central Ridge Route, at Ramah, where it turns south past Gibeah to Jerusalem. The Beth Horon Ridge Route is perhaps the most important connection from the coast to the central hill country near Jerusalem. Therefore, there were multiple biblical events that occurred here.
Hi, we are on the Beth Horon Ridge Route. During Joshua's time, he pursued the Amorites along with the Israelites down this route, and while the Amorites were fleeing, large hailstones fell on them from heaven.
Here is an aerial view of the Beth Horon Ridge Route. The route comes out from the Ajalon Valley, up on the ridge past lower and upper Beth Horon. Solomon fortified towns along this route to guard the approach to his capital, Jerusalem. There is another route that ascends from the Ajalon Valley into the hill country. From Emmaus, this route ascends on a ridge to the town of Kiryat Je'arim. Then it angles north and also joins the Central Benjamin Plateau at the site of Gibeon. On map 1-8, review the two routes that approach Jerusalem from the west. The first route travels through the flat Ajalon Valley plain and then ascends into the hill country on the Beth Horon Ridge. It comes into the Central Benjamin Plateau at Gibeon and joins the hill country watershed at Ramah. From Ramah, the route turns south on the Road of the Patriarchs, passing Gibeah to Jerusalem. The second route also comes through the Ajalon Valley, but ascends a ridge to Kiryat Je'arim. Note how Kiryat Je'arim is separated from Jerusalem by two deep canyons, the Upper Sorek and Kesselon Valleys. These canyons function as a moat on Jerusalem's western flank, forbidding any easy access to Jerusalem from the west. Instead, the Kiryat Jearim route angles north to Gibeon and Ramah in central Benjamin. There is a route that connects Kiryat Jearim more directly to Jerusalem, but it is not an easy one. It goes treacherously up and down valleys and ridges. Map 5-1 shows a historical event connected to the Kiryat Jearim ridge route. In the days of Samuel, the Ark of the Covenant returned from Philistia to Beth Shemesh, and then up to Kiryat Jearim, where the Ark stayed for 20 years until Samuel led Israel in a national repentance. The Ark stayed some 100 years in Kiryat Jearim, until King David brought it into Jerusalem. We can speculate on the route David used. He may have come through central Benjamin, past the cities of Ramah and Gibeah, Saul's capital, or the Ark traveled the more difficult road across the deep valleys flanking Jerusalem's western side. Map 6-1 shows the Beth Horon and Kiryat Jearim ridges being used. Solomon's son Rehoboam had built forts in Judah, but when he forsook the law of the Lord, his forts meant nothing. The Lord brought Pharaoh Shishak of Egypt against him. Shishak's own records parallel the biblical account. Shishak recorded the conquest of towns along both the Beth Horon and Kiryat Jearim ridges as he made his way up to threaten Rehoboam in Jerusalem. Now let's examine the east.
Okay. We'll back up here. Looks a long way. Now we'll go back and see how many of these cities in this area we'll be looking at tonight that you hear mentioned there. Here's Jerusalem. Geba. Gibeon. Kiryat Jearim. Mizpah. Michmash. Gilgal come into play. All these are right there. That little area, just north of Jerusalem, that flat area there. That's why there's so many cities in there, and it's why it's so important, because it controls all that access into Jerusalem, almost down through there. Okay? Alright. Now, why do we look at this? You look at the very first verse of 1 Samuel chapter 9. What ties it to this? Where's Saul from? The tribe of Benjamin, okay? Let's go back now. So, Saul is selected to be king. Saul is from a very prominent valley. What's said about his father, the last part of verse 1? Man of power, okay? So, Saul's father was a man of power, a very prominent man. And then in verse 2, what's said about Saul? Handsome man. What else? Short dude? No. Tall dude, head and shoulders above everybody else. Now, think about a king. Handsome guy, bigger and taller than everybody else. Natural guy for a king, right? Think about that, the appearance-wise we're talking about here. So, ideal type person, appearance-wise, for a king, Saul was. A very prominent family. So, Kish has a problem. He has some donkeys that get loose, and they go off, and he calls in Saul and says, Saul, take one of the servants and go try to find the donkeys. Now, if you read the approach he took to go find the donkeys, it talks about him going up through the hill country of what? Start with. Up through Ephraim. Well, where was Ephraim in relationship to Benjamin? It was north of it. So it talks about him going through the hill country of Ephraim first, and then read a little farther, and he came back down through what? Through Benjamin. So you think he was in Benjamin, you're talking about Benjamin first, but it's like he made a loop up north through Ephraim and came back down into Benjamin and just start searching for them there. So, but no luck finding the donkeys. Hadn't found the lost donkeys. So, he's ready to go back home because he's fearful of what? What's dad gonna be thinking about? He gonna forget the donkeys and be worried about, where's my son? So he's been looked, so he's just fearful of that. So he's ready to go back. And before he does so, what's a servant that we ought to do? We're going to go see the man of God. Go see a prophet or what else is he called? A seer, okay? And that word comes from one who sees, who would see in the future, as a prophet were there. And so he goes to that. But they got a little problem. Before they could go to see the seer, what do they need? something to give him, okay? Because it's customary when you see the seer to give him a gift of some kind for his help for it. But the servant says, I've got a quarter shekel of silver, and so he just will use that for the gift. He had no bread left, no food to give him like that, so he's got this little coin left he's going to give him. So they go in, and who's the prophet they're going to see? Samuel is. And, what does Samuel know ahead of time? I popped it up there on the screen. What did God told him? Tomorrow about this time, it's going to be some guy come to see you, and I sent him. I arranged this. So, providence of God's coming to play in here as Saul comes in and meets up with Samuel. So, what's God laying the groundwork at this time for all this? Saul's out looking for the donkeys. Lost donkeys. Saul goes to find them. Can't find them. Servant says, let's go find the prophet. So, God tells Samuel, somebody's going to come meet you. What's all this build planning to happen? God's choice for the king. That's right. All this is coming about through God's providence to bring those two together, the prophet and the king candidate, if you will, for this. So, he's coming to be the king, the choice of the first king of Israel, and he has the task of delivering them from their enemies, particularly it mentions the Philistines. What's Saul be doing here? So, Saul goes into the town, and this, I don't think it's Ramah, which is Samuel's hometown, which is right in the middle of this territory here we looked at. It seems to be one of the other cities because he's gone there like to visit, to help with one of the sacrifices, go eat at a banquet and then offer a sacrifice on the high place there. So Saul asks where the seer is, where the prophet is. And he does this. So some ladies have come out to draw water, young ladies out to get the water. And they said, he's just ahead of you. Go up there and you'll find him coming out. So he goes up to the city, comes out, and he meets Samuel. And so he wants to inquire about the donkeys. So but almost before we can talk about that, Samuel says, come on, you're going to have dinner with me tonight, type thing. Just grabs him and says, we're going to a banquet, you come go with me. And they go up at the sacrifice, and at this banquet has been arranged, and about 30 people there, and who gets a seat at the head of the table? Who gets a seat of honor all of a sudden? Saul does. Saul and his servant are put there. And furthermore, what does Samuel tell the cook to do? Go get that special plate I set aside for Saul. So everything's all arranged. He goes gets extra food and brings it out. He's got prepared there for Saul. So they have the dinner together, this banquet. Saul and Samuel there have come together. And Samuel tells him, oh, by the way, the donkeys we're looking for have been found. So don't worry about them. And then in verse 20, he makes a statement about Saul. What does he say? What does he say about Saul in verse 20? He's a what? He's a, and that's the first word it says, he's a desirable man for Israel. That verse 20 is there. Desirable for what is the question. What has God brought the two together for? He's come together to make him a king. Okay. He's a desirable one that God has brought to him. And how do we know that? Well, how does Saul react to what Samuel says? Me? I'm the least of the tribes, the least of my father's clan. Why would you select me for this? So it's pretty obvious that Saul knows that's what Samuel's talking about. It's this king thing. Because the people have already asked for a king. They know it's been done. Now, so go through this. Some of these verses, they've got little gold stars by them. Kind of keep those verses in mind. We're going to look at Saul's attitude a little bit later on. And they've been flagged these little gold stars on some of these charts here. So Saul's reply to him is, one of great humility is, me? Why me? Type thing. So, little side note. I think back to last quarter. Why was Benjamin the smallest of all the tribes? Not good a job for did last quarter in here. Why was Benjamin the smallest of the tribes? Yeah, that rebellion that they had back there and their own people turned against them and almost wiped them out. That's back in Judges chapter 20 and 21. So But Saul says, we're the least of tribes of Judah, of Israel, I mean. Yeah, that's right. Because of what your people had done and the other people come in and fight against you. You almost got wiped out. You know, they'd bring the wives in for them. Remember that last quarter? So that little side note about Saul mentioning about being from the smallest tribe there. So they have to place the banquet up there. Big food he's got for him. Got ahead of myself a little bit. Now, after the banquet, Samuel puts Saul to bed on the rooftop. They have prepared for him, throws him out, and he goes up the next morning really early, wakes him up and says, okay, gotta be on your way. So heads out of town and he's going to talk to him. So what does Samuel tell Saul to do with a servant? Just send him on up. Just let him go ahead of us. And you and I are going to linger back here so I can be just the two of us here together so I can talk to you and tell you what the Lord has, the message he has. So what does Samuel do with just the two of them together, there together? He wants you to be king. Now, who knows about it? Nobody now. It's a private thing. It's just Samuel and Saul. That's it. Okay, the servant's been sent ahead. And so now he's anointing him to be king. What's Saul's reaction to all this? This whole time, how Saul reacted to this? He's meek, very humble at this time. He's going and follow this same thought about Saul over through the rest of this chapter 10 as we get into it here. So he tells him he's going to be Israel's ruler. Now if you're Saul, you going to believe him? Me? The least of the tribes, the least of my father's house, king over this nation of Israel. So he gives him three signs. What are the three signs? What's he going to meet first? What's he going to see? Going to go up to Bethel and what are they doing? All right, back up. That's the second one. That's something happens first, right before that. I remember right. Back up. Before that. There's another sign before that. Go meet two men. What does it say about them? Yeah, right. Go meet two men, and they're going to all of a sudden tell him the donkeys have been found. What do these two men know about Saul looking for the donkeys? Well, nothing we know about. So the first thing he's going to do is going to meet two men that's going to tell him that your donkeys have been found. Second sign is what James is talking about here, and Doug, he meets three men. One's got some young goats, one's got some bread, and one's got some wine, okay? And the one's got three loaves of bread does what? Gives two of them to Saul, okay? So that's the next sign that's going to happen. And then these happened exactly like Samuel told Saul they're going to. Now the third sign is probably the more prominent one. What happens in it? Saul goes on a little farther, finds some prophets out there. Saul gets in with them. What does the Spirit of the Lord do? Comes up on Saul, and what does Saul do? He prophesies. Now we don't know exactly what that means as far as what Saul was doing or saying. Whatever here, but it's obvious something that Saul would not normally have been doing. Because what question is asked now? Is Saul what? Is Saul a prophet? Is Saul among the prophets? Saul has not been known to be a prophet. So all of a sudden Saul is prophesying. So that's the third sign that Samuel gives to Saul that what I'm telling you is going to come to pass. Okay? Okay, everybody up with us so far? Donkeys have been found. They found Samuel. They privately anointed Saul to be the king and give him three signs that what I'm telling you is going to come true. Saul goes on his journey and goes back and all three signs come apart over here. Yeah, you're right. And he said, yeah, right. That the very thing Saul had been afraid of, that his dad would be more worried about him than with the donkeys, is told to him too, okay? Now, Let's look at chapter 10 and verse 7. Somebody read that for me. Chapter 10 and verse 7.
Let it be, when these signs come to you, you do as the occasion demands, for God is with you.
Okay. Chapter 10 and verse 7. God is with you. Flip over to chapter 16 and somebody read verse 14. 16, 14. Gone. Opposite. Go over to 18:12. What does it say there? Yeah. The Lord's with him now, but in 16 and 18, the Lord's departed from Saul. So, it's the third place sign will take place here. Paul said it very specific about it. But the Lord's with him now in chapter 10. We just read in 16 where the Lord's gone, left him, and in chapter 18 where he's gone. All this is going to come apart in chapter 13. Saul's anointed in chapter 10, privately first, and then publicly. The Lord is with him. He's going to give them his signs. You're going to be the king. You're the one I've chosen. Saul is full of humility. But by chapter 13, God departs from him. Because of the choices that Saul makes. And we'll talk about that more in just a minute. But just look what a short period of time Saul had with the right kind of heart. So, the signs that were mentioned by Samuel all came to pass. That's in chapter 10, verses 9 through 13. So, gets home and what's his uncle asking? Where you been and who'd you run into and who'd you see? Well, Saul tells him about seeing Samuel. Well, what'd Samuel say to you? What's Saul tell him? You tell me about the donkeys that have been found. True? Yeah? Okay. What did he not tell him? The rest of it, which his uncle would probably not have believed if he had told him, right? Okay. So, his uncle asking him about the donkeys being found, knew nothing about the rest of it, did not tell him about that. So that's what's in the next part there in 10, 14, 15, 16. So now, Samuel brings all the people together to Mizpah. Now remember on the map, Mizpah was right at the little heart of that Benjamin Plateau area there, so we're staying in this little same little area here. So Samuel gathers all Israel there, and he tells them then that God brought you out of Egypt, God's led you, but you turned his back on him, you want a king, okay, we'll give you a king. So he starts his selection process. What does he do first? He casts lots and picks out what? What did he narrow it down to first? The tribe of Benjamin, okay? Then he starts casting lots again. It comes down to one of the certain clans. Then he casts lots again, and it comes down. They finally come down to who? Saul, just like when you knew would, right? It's already been determined. But there's this little problem, okay? Where's Saul? Nobody can find it. Who finally tells him where Saul is? God does, okay? He's over hiding in the equipment or in the baggage over here somewhere. Now, keep in mind, at this time, Saul has this humility. Okay? Very, very humble type person. A little star against this verse here again. Verse 22. So Saul is hidden among the baggage. They have to get him out and bring him out, make him king. Although he already knows it, he's just not ready to. He's just not sure he's the right one yet. Okay. So Samuel takes and writes down all about the people having a king. All the ordinances that's involved, puts them in a book, presents it to the Lord, and what do you think we'll do? We got a king, right? He's been anointed. They didn't do one thing that would kind of be kingly-like. What do the people say? Long live the king, okay? But they don't take him and put his warrior robe on him and lead him up to his big castle and all this kind of stuff. What happens? They just all go home. They just all go home. Like, that's it. Yeah, yeah. Just kind of, that's it. You got a king, Israel. You want a king. Now you got one. And everybody just goes home. So it's not the climax you would think about this king that's been anointed, all the people presented out there. You think, in my mind at least, I would think, okay, let's put a crown on his head and ring on his finger and purple robe on him and put him in his castle. He's the king of Israel. He just goes back home. All the people do. In fact, what some of the folks think about this whole thing? He's a spy, you know. One of the devil goes home, and there's some of these worthless men, they're called, totally disrespects Saul. But Saul just lets it go. Okay. That's kind of what's in chapters 9 and 10. Okay. Something we missed, somebody will bring up. Oh, it's, yeah, foreign city. Right. Yes, good point. What Mike's saying is Jerusalem, even though it's a point of reference for us, has nothing to do with Jewish, with the Israelite history at this point in time. It's just a foreign city. The Jebusites live there. It's nothing to the Israelites whatsoever. It's just another city. We use it for reference because we know where it is. Okay. But it's just another foreign city and doesn't come into play until after about 7 years into David's reign, when he moves from Hebron captured Jerusalem. So we got 40 years of Saul's reign and then 7 years of David's reign before we actually get Jerusalem into our picture here. Okay, good point. Yeah, right. Oh yeah, they accepted Saul, long live the king, but there's this little worthless crowd over here. So, okay. Let's talk about a couple points here. See tonight. And the first one is physical versus spiritual. What did the people want? Who was their king? Who was their leader? God was. See him? Touch him? Feel him? No. Okay. Spiritual in nature. What do they want? Somebody we can see. Somebody to lead us into battle. They want this physical presence there. As opposed to that, they wanted a king that could lead them and go before them to war. What does chapter 10, verse 24 say? Somebody got it there? Yeah, you got this king. Perfect specimen, handsome, tall, this king you wanted. There he is, presented physically before. Let's read some of these verses. And I've got them up here. I'll read them. Just think about them as we go through them. We got a little time here. John 6:27. What's going on in John chapter 6? Jesus has fed the people, remember, and they follow him. They follow him not for what he's teaching them, but for what? The physical food, okay? The physical food. Separation, the choice of physical versus the spiritual in John chapter 7, in John chapter 6. And John 18, verse 36, he says, my kingdom is not of this world. You know, if my kingdom was just of this world, what would happen? My servants would do what? They would fight. It's a physical kingdom. That's not what my kingdom is. Spiritual versus the physical here. 2 Corinthians 10, we walk by the flesh versus walking by the spirit. Okay, the contrast there between the two. And of course, Ephesians 6, what's in Ephesians 6, 11 through 18? The Christian armor, okay? What do you put on? Not a physical shield and sword and all, it's all what? It's all spiritual, okay? It's a sword of, it's just a truth and the and righteousness and all these things that we put on in our Christian armor. In 1 Corinthians 2, is speaking wisdom among those who are mature, not the wisdom of this age, but the wisdom of the age to come. That, okay? Physical versus spiritual. They lost sight of their spiritual leader. They want somebody they can see, that physical side. And we got to be careful. Do the same thing. Too much emphasis on the physical, the fleshly side, as opposed to our spiritual side. Okay? I just got a thought about that one. All right, this other one's one we've mentioned going through here already. It has to do with humility. Think about Saul at this point in his life. Me, you know, the least tribe, the least family, hidden among the baggage. Humility couldn't be any more so than what Saul was at this time. And that's what was starred all through here with all those stars we had as we went through this chapter. All these verses talking about Saul and his attitude in chapters 9 and 10. Very humble. Okay. Nowhere here do we see that you know, this I'm the king thing. There's no indication in these chapters that this is the slider that's gone to his head, as it might here. But, talked about already, that's not what happened. His disposition changes, and these verses here, we looked at some of these already, Saul's attitude totally changes. Totally changes. And when it does, chapter 13 we'll get to, actually next time, 11, 12, 13 for Sunday morning, we'll get into what happens there when God departs from him, chapter 13. So let's look at some of these, a couple of these verses here right quick. Proverbs 16, 18. Pride goes before what? Destruction and haughty spirit before fall. Pride. Haughtiness. Okay. Totally, totally bad. And then Luke 14, 7 through 18 talks about being invited to a feast. When you go to the feast, where are you going to sit? At the lowest seat. You go sit at the head of the table, and what happens to you? The guest comes to move you down here where this other person has promised. No, when you go in, you go sit at a lowly seat and show your humility, and then they'll come move you up to a higher place. Okay? Humility there. And then Romans 12, verse 3. Paul says, for I say through the grace given to me to everyone who is among you not to think of himself more highly than he ought to think. Okay? Humility. Humility. Saul had it. Saul rapidly loses it. All these verses here talk to us about our attitudes, our humility, how we should look. No haughtiness. Okay. That's it. You've got 2 minutes. Who's got some point to make? Anybody? Thoughts? Questions? Yes, sir. Yeah, it does got to be. When they made Saul king, what Saul said, okay, bring me all the gold, bring me all your silver, right? I mean, I'm the king. Do all this stuff. Now, is that going to happen? You go down the road, what did Moses say about Deuteronomy? And what did we read last time when Samuel told him what's going to happen when you get a king? He's going to start pulling these things in. But Saul's not like that now. Okay? He's got this whole different attitude this morning. He'll be showing through. Okay, I think, is it 10, 11, and 12, I think, for Sunday? Is that right? No, 11, 12, 13, three chapters. 11, 12, and 13, 1 Samuel for Sunday. Please just read them. I'll have the handout then for you. I didn't bring it here tonight. If you read those three chapters, we'll be ready to go. Read them a couple of times, get them in your mind, look at that then. Okay, thank you very much.